Michael Oliver from Momentum Structural Analysis. Welcome to The Competent Investor. How are you?
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me in.
It's great to have you on the new show. I really appreciate the support and the opportunity to speak with you again and share your thoughts and your insights with a new audience and hopefully some of the old audience. It's always a pleasure to, you know, really go through all of these markets with you, and today will be no exception.
We've got I sent you our weekend report, our last weekend report, Tom, and we cover all major markets, but there's some very interesting things going on. So you lead the way. Okay.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, a good place to start is going to be the stock market here. And I guess the best place to really kind of begin with that is what you're seeing from the momentum side on the S&P, right?
Yeah. First off, our assessment is we're at the top of a major bubble, and we've been there since late 2024, early 2025. Yeah, we've made a new high. But that's the way S&P has topped in the past. Anyway, you can see what's happened since the April lows. Actually, this is even after the April lows. We've had this surge that got us back to, you don't see it here, but the old price high in January was above 6,100. And it was late June, we got above the old high, the January high, mm-hmm. after having been knocked down, you know, to 4,800 area. And momentum already, long-term momentum, even much longer term than what we're going to look at here, says you broke the back of the integrity of the prior uptrend. You're broken. And this rally on momentum is not to a new high on real long-term metrics. It's saying, hey, now I'm having a broken trend, counter trend rally. While prices up here got up to 8-9% above its prior high, something it did, by the way, in 2000 top. We predicted a high in January of 2000, and yet in March through the summer, it made a higher high, mm-hmm. marginally, but enough to make people feel comfortable. And also same type of process occurred in 2007, where you made a high that was marginally in our target zone, and then came back later in September and October when the Fed cut rates, by the way, first time in a good time, and they caused a rally. And you made an all-time new high in the S&P, and everybody thought, it's gone forever, and that was it. It's the tombstone. Anyway, I think we're there, and I think it's important because when the stock market does break, all the data points that might have seen comfy over the last year or so will go negative real quick. That's the way it happens. They don't go negative before the stock market. They usually go negative after, in a serious way, that is. And that'll, of course, turn the Fed totally, you know, if they're walking a balance line right now, they won't. They'll go totally into print, 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 cut, 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 et cetera, because they'll have the data points, et cetera. And also the money, when it leaves the stock market, goes somewhere. It always does. You never have a phenomenon where everything goes down. Even in 29, gold miners went through the roof. You couldn't buy gold because Roosevelt banned it. You know, he stole everybody's gold. But the homestake mining went up like 1,000% during that great bear market. Well, the stock market dropped about 80% between 1929 and 32. But anyway, so we're watching the stock market because of its wave implications elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And we're also watching some sectors of the stock market that most people aren't. Most people are focused on NVIDIA, which is fine, because the leaders will lead you back down. They led the way up by many multiples, and when they break, they'll go down more. But there's some other sectors within the market or linked to the market that we'll look at later as well. But right now, here's the price chart of the S&P. This is as of last Friday's close. We made a slightly higher high this week, got up near that 6,700 mark. And right now we're down on the week. We closed last week 66.64. Last I saw when we were talking, we're down about 10 points on the week. No big deal. You'll notice that while the price chart continues up, the momentum chart has built a floor. Price chart has this irregular uptrend, incremental type steps all along the way. Nothing explosive, particularly once we took out the January high. All the rest of the move was incremental. But anyway, on momentum, you built a flat structure at 400 points above the popular 100-day average. Mm-hmm. So the 100-day average really isn't important technically as a pivotal level. What's important is the structure that it built at 400 points above that average. This is what we call a momentum structure. You'll see there's trades down to it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times since July, and two closes right around the plus 400 level. So the plus 400 level is really a clear structure. Well, you don't want to go down and close below that. Mm-hmm. Well, as we specified, applicable for today, for example, 65.91 would do it. Well, we're trading 66.40-50 level right now. That number jumps up 10, 11 points every day. So we get later in the week. You don't want to be down around much below the today's low, for example. You'll be breaking this momentum structure. Now, you look at the price chart at that point, and you'll say, eh, no big deal. Momentum says, yeah, big deal. This is a fairly 100-day average, just like about a five-month moving average, you know, about 20 trading days a month, you know, et cetera. So it's reasonably long-term, not super long-term, but it's important. So if you break it, it's not trivial. It doesn't mean you're going to have a bad day or two. It mm-hmm. probably means you're going to have a bad couple months, okay? Anyway, that's what we're facing right now, is this pending structure below the stock market that only momentum can see. Price does not reveal that price level as being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. We're watching it. And then, you know, there's a lot of talk about the market. It's so good because, the you know, some of the leading stocks have leveled off the Mag 7, and yet the broad market is going up. Now, if you'll flip to further on in this report, you'll see that that's sort of an error. Okay, this is a spread chart. And what is a spread chart? We divide the price of XLF, the financial sector ETF, into the price of the S&P, express that as a percent. And here we go back to early 2024, mm-hmm. and these are weekly spread closes. Yeah, it's early 2024. You can see that during much of 2024, the financial sector was going up on a relative basis to the stock market. Hence, the spread was in an uptrend. Mm-hmm. So it meant, hey, it was participating with the market during the market's advance during that time up through late 2024 and early into this year. But something happened as of April. That spread topped. That's when the market made its low. S&P made its low. Every sector basically made a net price low. But in performance, financial sector has slumped hard consistently since April. In other words, yeah, it may be going up with the stock market, but it's going up at a much lesser pace. It's anemic now. Look at the other key sector, healthcare. Continues in an underperformance trend to the market. Well, heck, the financial sector is 13.6% of the S&P. Healthcare is almost 9%. You know, suddenly we're talking about, you know, over 20% of the market is represented by those top two sectors, mm-hmm. non-tech. Go down another, industrial sector. Also, since April, May, when the stock market made its low and turned up, industrial sector slumped in performance versus the broad market. Why? Okay. Consumer discretionary. It's an interesting sector because usually the consumer discretionary sector, by the way, it's front end loaded with Amazon. It's 22% of that ETF, for example. But even with Amazon in there, it has been underperforming since late last year. Rest of the stocks in that sector are non-tech. So it's basically a non-tech sector, but it's considered to be risk on sector. In other words, if you want to position yourself in a sector that goes up strongly during the market moves, consumer discretionary has always been one of those sectors. Mm-hmm. And it's not. And so what's going on? Why are all these key sectors now underperforming the stock market? Now, when you flip to the page below, you get into two sectors that are tech. Well, information.
You know, Michael, I find it interesting that, you know, taking these four sectors, financial, healthcare, industrial, yeah. and consumer together, you know, that's 40% of the market.
Yeah.
And they all seem to be going in the same trend, right? And then
yeah, the same relative
we're going to get to tech here.
Why did they all get weak? Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at tech, yeah, that's where your leadership has come. Those green arrows show back to the April low in their performance. And as you can see, into the April low, they were weak, weaker than the S&P. Then suddenly they got robust again. So most of the leadership on the upside in terms of relative performance since the April low is very narrow now. You're down strictly to information technology. That's like Microsoft, Apple, and Oracle are three of the biggies in that ETF, VGT. And the other sector below is Vox ETF, which is communication services. Meta, Google, and the two Google stocks are there, heavy weighted in that. And they've gone vertical. So the market's strength recently in terms of relative performance is sharply narrowed down to tech. That wasn't the case in 2024, as we saw in those prior spreads. When the market was going up, they were going up too in performance to the S&P. Now they're not. Okay, so anybody who talks about, hey, the market's in, it's broadly looking good, not when you really measure it. It's not. It's very narrow. Mm-hmm. It's largely due to these tech sectors and a few stocks within those tech sectors going robust again. So the market is narrowed in this recent rally. And that's not a good sign for the notion that it will continue. Anyway, these are technical peripherals that are probably very important to note.
Yeah,
indicating, a rollover is quite possible here.
Mm-hmm. What do you think happened in April that kind of spurred this?
It was technically ripe. In January, we had a technical signal to sell the S&P. 4 weeks later, the S&P took out its price high after we said, be gone. That was around the 6,000 level. It got up to 6,100 in February, 6,147, I think it was. And then, unfortunately, the drop was associated with news. You particularly don't want headlines, particularly political type headlines, to be, oh, that's why it's going down. There's far bigger reasons for the stock market to go down than Trump's tariffs or his retraction of the tariffs. Remember his 90-day pause. And when he did that 90-day pause, everybody said, okay, let's buy. And that helped the April low. So it was headline based on the downside, headline based on the upside. You don't want that. What drives markets are bigger issues that have been building over the years, such as vast overpricing of a stock market as an asset, based largely on rapid growth in the money supply and interest rates put at levels we've never seen in history, namely zero for 10 or 15 years in between 2008 and 2024. We had rates, 10 of those 15 years were what? Zero effectively. Zero, yeah. And then when they took them up, and then we had the COVID event, they took them back to zero again. And even when they raised rates, year and a half or so ago, got up to 5%. Those are still historically, if you look back 75 years on a Fed funds rate chart, they're still in the bottom third of the range of the past 75 years. So in effect, you have a market that's been cheech and chonged into drug upside by free money and excessive money. The problem is when those bubbles break, the 2000 top, when you started the break, they cut rates like crazy. Mm-hmm. 2000 to 2002, it did not help one bit. 2007, in fact, the rate cut, the initial surprise rate cut, is what printed the top, and they cut rates all the way down and it didn't help. So if they start cutting rates now, don't expect the stock market to benefit. Going somewhere else.
Michael, that's exactly what I wanted to get to. It seems like the market's reaction to this 25 basis point cut is really interesting to consider here. In many of my discussions in the past here, it seems a lot of analysts believe the Fed is going to be too late to react to cut rates. And yet we've seen since the rate cut that there's been a good appreciation in many of the markets. So at this point, could we see this as, just a little bit of positive thinking? For some exogenous event, like another geopolitical conflict starts and shocks the market back to reality?
Not even that. I think that the underlying reason for it to go down is that it went too far on the upside because it was printed there. And when you print money and create and people make investment, forget about the stock market itself. Think about the economy, a family's economy. Hey, dear, let's sell our house and buy more property, build a bigger house. Okay. Commit more capital to that. One of the factors in that decision process is what? The price of money, interest rates. Okay. So if interest rates are historically low, as they've been for the last decade and a half, even with the recent rise to 5%, that's still low. People make errors. Companies make investment decisions, expanding factories, hiring more workers, getting more enthusiastic about some product they've got. And then suddenly, the cost of money comes into play again. Mm-hmm. Oops, we made a mistake based on that basic building block of the thought process. Same with governments. So it's those accumulated errors over a decade and a half that suddenly start to snap. And it's not something new that causes it. It's something that's already happened that right. causes your bear trend. Like the dot-com bubble. Why did it break? It got overpriced. Mm-hmm. The NASDAQ 100 dropped 82% by 2002. S&P only dropped 50%. Why? It wasn't that internet was an invalid concept. It's totally valid. It's just they overpriced it, you know, for a period of time. And it took, by the way, till 2016 for the NASDAQ 100 to even get back up to its 2000 price level. So it's not what's going to happen. It's what's already happened and what gets cleansed. So I think that's what's about to occur here. And it won't be due to a headline this time. Now, there may be some ambush events that help spark it. They won't be the prime causal factor. There'll be pinpricks that help cause the bubble to break. And we can get on to one of those later in our little chat in an area people weren't expecting. But meanwhile, the monetary metals just continue onward and onward. And people say, well, why is that occurring? You know, inflation's not rampant. You know, gasoline prices are steady, like Trump promised. You know, so why are they going up? Well, anyway, that's our prime focus at MSA right now.
But before we get to that, do you think that they've basically abandoned these inflation targets in favor of the jobs market? Like, is that what's coming into the Fed's thinking right now?
They'll have to, but they've also got another crisis, and that's their own debt, the government bond market, not mortgages, not some downfall in the AI stocks. They don't care about that. But their T-bond market is a dog. And we've technically held the door open for that market to have a major counter trend rally. Yeah, if you want to go to that, that's fine. This is T-bond price on the top going all the way back to 2019. And in 2020, it started down and we turned major bearish at a price of above 170 on T-bond futures. They subsequently dropped in the year 2022, late October of 2022, to down into 115s. Finally got down under 110 a year later in 2023. And you would think, well, look at that price action on the top chart. It looks like a basing action, right? Well, could be. But momentum is already spent. This is quarterly momentum. It's where we measure the monthly action versus the three-quarter average, and we oscillate it against that average. You can see that you've been rising, attempting to get something going on the upside. And we're in our third wave, and so far it's produced nothing in terms of price recovery. Well, three waves are all you get. And so far what it's been is while momentum is corrected from fairly deep levels to more neutral levels, with not much, in fact, we're right below the zero line as we speak, meaning below the three-quarter average, you've not had much price consequence except dullness, stability. That's not what the government needs. And frankly, when you think about this as inverted as rates, yields, we're at stranglehold levels for the past 3 years at very high yields, choking, 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 no relief at all. And even when the Fed cuts rates, they cut them back September last year, remember, a little bit.
Yep.
And what the T-bond market do? It puked. Yields went up in the T-bond market. It didn't care about the short end. And so they got a real problem, the government does, in funding this beast, because they can't let this guy get out of control. And frankly, you look at the momentum chart there, you'll see there's an uptrend line under the past three waves of upside. You drop price now back to 110 again. Right now we're trading, what, 116? In the middle of the last couple years range, you drop back to that 110 level again, that momentum chart's going to break that uptrend, in which case you're going to get a T-bond crisis. Because you're going to get some kind of spike on the downside or higher yields that's going to cause government to get very upset and the central bank to get very upset. Print, print, print. They're going to have to do something. Because this market can't be allowed to go down anymore.
I find it interesting how you say, you know, in the notes here that it's starting to look like a dead asset. And my question to you is, do you think that at some point the bond vigilantes come back in when one of these structures breaks and, you know, reassert themselves in that market?
I don't know. I don't even know if there is such a thing called the bond vigilantes. I know they like to talk about it, but, you know, define that. Okay. Who are they? You know, right now, major asset managers, if you, that top chart is monthly bars. You go back about five or six bars, you'll see there's one bar get up over 120 and then puke down toward 110. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that bar right there. Yeah. That was coincident drop with the S&P, meaning at a time when the S&P was puking from early April to late to mid-April, T-bonds broke too. In fact, there's 2 days within that month, T-bonds dropped 10 points. For this market, that's enormous. Why weren't they an alternative? Because normally, asset managers will move to T-bonds if they perceive risk in the stock market. You know, the 60-40 rule, okay? They didn't. They dumped T-bonds too. This market is not behaving as it normally does, meaning an alternative. And so something's wrong here. So if you're a major asset manager and you're looking for a place to go if the stock market rolls over again, and you bought T-bonds back in April thinking it was a place to go, you got gut kicked. So there's something wrong with this market. We all know why. You know, Jamie Dimon said, you know, you can't keep playing this game decade after decade, government debt rising versus GDP, et cetera, et cetera. Sometime this is going to come into a confrontation event. And I think maybe we're there. So this is the kind of thing, if you're in the stock market, this is supposed to be an alternative. If it's not, uh-oh, where are you going to go? And I think this is, this. Therefore, we're focused on this market.
Well, and I mean, all of this possibly comes down to what we're going to talk about next, right? And that is the Bitcoin market. So, you know, how do you see this interplay or the you know, the push-pull of Bitcoin being, you know, really put into the stablecoin market and the rise of the stablecoin market backed by treasuries? Is the U.S. looking to just basically dump all of its debt into the crypto market?
We try not to pay attention to the fundamentals. Okay.
Okay.
But if you go to the first Bitcoin chart there, this is a weekly, 100-week average, which is very long term. That's like a 4-year moving average. Okay. Top chart is weekly bars of price of Bitcoin since 2023. By the way, MSA got bullish back then in late 22, early 23, coming up to 20,000. since then, you've had three major up waves on price. First one being quite strong, got up toward 76,000 in that first surge from a 20,000 level. And then the next surge took you up to about 110,000. You leveled off late last year at 110 twice. And then when you came back up early this year, 110,000 found resistance again, but then you finally burst through. But this time when you burst through, it was a minor pop. It wasn't an explosion. And last month, actually, this shows weekly bars, but last month closed back below 110. That's not a good idea if you're a price guy, getting back below the prior breakout. This third wave in price, if you look at the momentum chart below, this is, again, it's a 100-week average we're measuring it against, which is overlaid on the price chart. The oscillator shows where it is in relation to that average. And you'll see that three different times since getting above it back in 2024, you've pulled back and stopped at 40% over. Mm-hmm. You've traded below 40%, but never closed a week out at 40% over. They've all held just above there. Therefore, that red horizontal on momentum. That's called a momentum structure. You don't see the same structure on price. You see ascending lows. But on momentum, you have a flat line. It's a floor. You get into next week and about 109,000 is going to break that. We're trading, what, 112, 113 right now? Okay. You know, handful of percent points below here, and you're going to blow that structure on this momentum chart. Watch out. And by the way, now flip to the next page. Now, this is monthly chart of Bitcoin on the top, not weekly. And quarterly momentum, this is where we measure price in relation to a three-quarter moving average, which is overlaid on the price chart, but it's used as a zero line on the second chart below at the momentum chart. Now, you'll notice that since getting above that zero line back in 2023, you've pulled back to it three different times and never closed a month below it. Well, when we get into next quarter, that three-quarter moving average is projected to jump up to 101,000 plus. Now, okay, recent lows in the pullback in Bitcoin have been 107,000. So we're talking about 5 to 6% below the low we just made, and I'm going to blow this massive multi-year structure on Bitcoin. Now, this is lagged. Even though this is a shorter term metric, it's long term, three quarter average, but it's less long term than that 100 week that we just looked at, which is like a 4 year average. It's going to break first. If that 100 week breaks, you can bet this three quarter is going to get in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And this is our last structure. You break this, it's over. Now, what do I mean by it's over? Scroll down to the archival chart below there on that same page. Okay, move over to the right a little bit there. Okay. This is the monthly price of the S&P back in 1984 through 1987. Multiple waves to the upside. And look at the momentum chart below. This is where each monthly bar, how much above that zero line is it, above the three-quarter average? Well, you know, there's three waves there. You've had multiple pullbacks to the zero line, just like Bitcoin chart above, and you've held it. The fourth time didn't. And if you waited for the monthly close below the zero line, you missed it. Now, I caught this move personally, as did my clients. I was a futures broker then. Not in a big way, but we caught it with some puts. Mm-hmm. That broke like it, once you rolled into the fourth quarter and you ooze price down to that 300 price level. If you look at the price chart, 300 didn't mean much. But on that momentum chart, you blew a floor going all the way back to 1984. And you crashed. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with Bitcoin right now is that if you take its monthly price chart on the chart above again and overlay it, and we don't have the overlay here, but go back to the top chart at the top of that page. Yeah. What's happened since 2022, you'll notice Bitcoin bottomed when coincident with the 2022 lows in the stock market. Does it pull back from late 2021 highs, exactly like NASDAQ 100, which peaked in November 2021, exactly when Bitcoin peaked, that second bar on the extreme left, is 70,000. You dropped into the late 2022 lows, down 10,500 level, coincident with the NASDAQ's pullback. And since then, you've produced multiple waves up, just like the NASDAQ. In fact, we did a study recently. You can almost overlay the month-by-month bars of Bitcoin on NASDAQ 100. They're the same beast. The problem is, therefore, you don't want to see Bitcoin break that quarterly structure because it's a good chance NASDAQ's going to go with it. Mm-hmm. They've been brother-sister all the way up, technically, meaning something's happened to Bitcoin that's made it behave like the speculative NASDAQ, the same emotions at the same time, sell at the same time, buy at the same time. This was not true with Bitcoin 10 years ago. And the other problem with Bitcoin now, and remember, Bitcoin's like 57% of the crypto market. Even Ethereum, the next big one's only like 13% of the entire crypto market. So Bitcoin is the god of that market. Okay, so it's very important. You can look at some other one if you want, but it doesn't matter. This is the weight. If this guy breaks down and NASDAQ breaks too, you got a real problem. And they're technically overlaid. So, and the other problem with fundamentally now with Bitcoin is 10 years ago, this wasn't true, but now it's become financially critical because so many major companies have gotten embedded in the crypto market, financially speaking. They haven't just put their toe in it, they put their hip bone in it, and they're committed to it. And their own capital's at risk in it. So you don't want this market, which everybody's so happy with, to roll over from this third wave high on price, non-confirmed by momentum, and break that structure. So what I'm saying is right now we're about 10% above that level on the quarterly momentum, but for that 100-week momentum, the current price is only about 3 or 4% above its breakage level. You break these structures and Bitcoin's going down, and I'll bet NASDAQ 100 will be coincident with it. So that's why we're focused on Bitcoin now more intently than we've ever been because of its linkage. Mm-hmm.
So, Michael, what does this, you know, as you're saying, you're more focused on Bitcoin right now than ever. Obviously, you know, we just explained why. Do you think, you know, as a contrast to this, do you think that gold has, you know, this run up has damaged the upside potential for gold at this point?
No, I think that you know, there's this debate that Bitcoin's better than gold because it's an alternative currency. Well, now suddenly it's been embraced by government. Okay, so it's really, you know, the question is it really a viable alternative? And first off, I'd love somebody to define to me what is a Bitcoin. I mean, seriously, you know, mm-hmm. I know what a tulip bulb mania was. At least there were reality of the tulip bulbs and people bought them for the beauty of their yards and so forth. You know, I can sort of understand that. What's a big, anyway, forget that. The spread relation between Bitcoin and crypto and gold is breaking down, meaning gold is ascending and only freshly. By the way, we're higher than that chart. That chart's a week or so old there. We're up near 3,800 now. And you can see we just came out of a 5-month corrective pause. So it's fresh, refreshed to go for more. It is not behaving like Bitcoin. Bitcoin is topping. Gold is ascending. And the chart below, by the way, is very unusual because this is a shorter term chart. This is only a 3-month average oscillator. So even if you broke it, it's not all that consequential. But even this, it's refusing to break its structure even after multiple hits. Same kind of addictive behavior occurred back in 79-80 as gold ascended and went up eightfold. And in
79-80 right here.
Yeah. I think we're right now on gold. First off, that move at the top of the page was an eightfold move from its bear low. The bear low occurred in 76, just above 100. And went up to 850. So it was an eightfold multiple move. Okay. The chart below is 2001, bear low around 260, 255, I think it was, and to a high in 2011 of, you know, nearly 2000. So it was an eightfold move as well before it topped. And right now we're not even fourfold from our prior bear market low. And yet I hear these headlines from banks and others that say, wow, it's an off-the-page move by gold. It isn't. We're not even halfway in terms of multiple gain that we had in those two prior bull markets. If gold just matched those two in multiple terms, it'd be $8,500. Okay. You get up there, then we can talk about, well, gold has now matched its two prior bull market peaks in terms of relative gain. Then when you do a real valuation of gold relative to the decay in the money unit, because we're measuring here versus a piece of paper that loses value in massive amounts every decade, because it almost doubles in quantity every decade, gold would, you know, have to be 8,000 just to match one of these old highs. Mm-hmm. And we have a different world now. We have a situation where we have the biggest stock market in the history, U.S. market. We have a bond market that's at crisis mode. We have factors in play now that could drive gold well beyond the norm of an eightfold move. My main focus right now is on silver, by the way, not gold. Gold is the mama, and I think it's just beginning its acceleration phase. But I think silver is really the monster that is going to emerge on the upside, and real soon. In fact, it's in the process right now. Mm-hmm. You go to page five. Okay, go ahead. There's a good chart right there. But go ahead. You were going to ask something, Tom?
I was going to say, you know, even just silver over the last 2 days. Of course, we're recording this on September 22nd here, and just in the last 2 days, we're up almost $2, right? And silver's momentum in that way has been incredibly not unexpected, but you know, like, it leaves a lot of people kind of in disbelief of silver's price action at this point.
And the top chart here is the monthly close of silver divided into the price of gold at that monthly close, going back to 2020. Remember when silver and gold exploded into mid 2020? Gold went from like 1400 to over 2000. Silver went from like $15 to 30. Okay, so silver outperformed gold and went from 0.9% of the price of an ounce of gold up to over 1.5% price of gold. And it did it in a matter of, look at how many, you know, 8 or 9 months, much of it occurring in the last 6 months. We've been depressed again over the last, since 2021 high, that spread has eroded back down under 1% again. Mm-hmm. Which if you go back 50 years and look, 1% is, it's been seen before, but every time it has been, it's off the page cheap. Well, those last, that's April, May, June, July, August. So May, June, July, August, and September. So last 5 months, that spread has been advancing, favoring silver. And right now, silver's up more on the year than gold is, by the way, in terms of price. The chart below is a momentum chart of the spread chart. Top chart is simply price versus price. The bottom chart measures that action versus a 10-month moving average. Now, if you look at both charts, you can see a ceiling. For the spread chart, we need to get up to 1.31% to get above that, and you've broken out. Mm-hmm. Okay, right now, silver's up just below 1.2%. Okay, so it looks like it's got a little way to go. Momentum is closer to its breakout. All it needs is 1.23%. So the momentum chart is closer to a breakout, the red circle, than is the spread chart. Momentum almost always leads price. So you get silver, look at the top chart again, you'll see the red circle there in the middle of nowhere. That's where momentum will break out and say, yep, you're going to break out on the spread as well. Back in 79 to 80, and also in 2010, prior to the surge into the 2011 high on silver, the same thing happened. The spread came up with silver being severely discounted, came up and broke out. And when silver broke out on the spread versus gold, two things happened. One, silver outperformed vastly over the next handful of months. But the net price of silver went ballistic. Gold continued up very sharply during the, you know, late 79 to 80, gold went up big. You know, silver like doubled it, tripled it even. Right now, I think we're on the cusp of that event, where not only is silver beating gold since April of this year, in fact, year to date, it's beating gold, but you've seen the surge a little bit more and you're going to break this beast out. And when that spread breaks out, price will go absolutely berserk, is our forecast. We're going to put out a special report this coming weekend, and I'm not going to get into the details about it. We had been predicting that this surge in silver will blow out the two prior $50 price highs we saw in 2000, 1979, 80. Actually, it got close to 50, not quite. And got up to 50 in 2011. Those highs will come out. I don't have no doubt about the price. They're ridiculous because in real dollar terms, silver, in order to match like the 1980 high, it'd probably be $200 in real dollar terms, you know, the decay of the dollar. Okay. Mm-hmm. once you break that spread out, I expect dramatic acceleration in price. We thought silver might go up into the 60-70 range before it paused. We're rescinding that view now. We think it's going much higher in the next 3 to 6 months, much of it by end of the year, probably extended into next quarter. And I won't get specific about where, but I think it's dramatically higher than the $60-$70 range. So when we go up and take out that 50 level, which I think we're going to do on price, it's going to be far more earth-shaking than you can imagine in terms of where silver will be. Yeah, gold's going to continue up. Remember, it's not even halfway in relative terms to what they did in 1980 and 2011. But silver, I think, could go ballistic. And pause and think about this for just a minute. Gold is way above its 2011 high, price high. So is copper. It's above right now where it's trading is above its 2011 price high. Keep going right there. Yeah, that chart. This is a logarithmic scale chart of silver monthly closes. So it's a ratio scale. Now, it only shows closes because intra-month back in that 1980 high, you actually got up to $50, would be higher. The high close was like 40-something, so it wasn't, doesn't just show the real high. Mm-hmm. Basically, the 1980 surge and the 2011 surge sort of double-topped at price at 50, but at a log scale. If we match the log scale, the ratio move that occurred in the final 6 or 7 months of both of those surges, when price during those trends accelerated, gold, silver beat gold handily during that time, broke out versus gold, but also silver's price went parabolic. We could be well over $100, you know, in the first quarter of next year. Now, we're going to deal with that in more specifically in our weekend report. But that's sort of our ballpark revised estimate. Because even price chart of silver now, if you just focus on it, not even its momentum, is arguing you've been in an arm wrestling process since that 2015 low back there, $15 on silver. Yeah, right about there. Yeah. It's been a laborious layered process. You only do that for so long. And finally, you just go berserk because you end it with a move that gets you into more reality. You can look at some base metals like, you know, zinc and tin. If, you know, a couple of those are above their 2011 high right now. Is silver going to stay below its 2011 high? For, you know, is it a dog? No, we know fundamentally silver's not. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's got new supply-demand problems that few people are acknowledging. Demand for solar cell consumption, you know, part of the composition of that. Even in just all the AI-related electronics, micro pieces of silver are being needed. And they can't be recycled once they're used because it's such a trivial element of silver involved. So once it gets consumed, it can't be recycled out. And it's beating the annual production of silver. So you don't have an excess. And besides, even when the price of silver goes up, it does not entice increased production of silver. Why is that? Yeah, for the specific silver miners, it does, but they don't comprise the majority of the production of silver. Most silver comes from base metal miners. Mm-hmm. So they're producing zinc or they're producing copper. And if the silver goes ballistic, it hardly incites them to produce more copper to get that extract of silver. So it's an unusual market in that regard, in that its higher price does not necessarily excite more production. So I think we're sitting on a time bomb here. Mm-hmm. And my entire portfolio, even though I think the stock market's stopping in a major way and it's going to be a great short, is not going to compare to what's about to happen here in percent terms.
As we're talking about miners, Michael, are they reacting, you know,
the way that
you think they should be? Like,
yeah. Well, here's the spread of GDX versus gold, the same spread we looked at for silver. You go back about 5 months to April, May, that spread broke out, meaning GDX is going to outperform gold. Now look at the chart on just below it, the GDX price chart. Look what happened since April. You went from $40. You're now pressing. You're now at 75.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it time we're talking. I mean, you know, almost doubled in what, handful of months. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you don't see it here, but the 2011 high was in the 60s for GDX. So it's blown through its 2011 price high. Mm-hmm. The gold, and they also include some silver miners in GDX as well. But it's started to go ballistic, and it's only just now broken out of over its 2011 high. So yeah, relative to what we've seen the last few years, it looks like, gee, it's gone ballistic, but it's only just taken out its prior all-time high. So if you want to consider that a breakout, which we it's valid, it's only just now getting above that level. This is a momentum chart below that also suggested about 5-6 weeks ago, we're going to go parabolic. And sure enough, 5-6 weeks ago, you started to go parabolic.
Yeah, as that structure is.
Yeah, clear structure that wasn't clear on the price chart. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's what we're dealing with here. And it's still not a primary conversation on CNBC or even Fox Business News. Yeah, gold made a new high, et cetera. But that's mentioned occasionally. But now, this chart on the top left is interesting. And this reflects what we looked at with silver versus gold. Here's silver miners versus gold miners going back to 2020. It was a big sharp up move in 2021 where the silver miners beat the gold miners sharply. But then since then, they've retreated in performance. And over the last several years, that spread has basically gone sideways, either side of 90%. Right now, you're pressing, as we speak, up against that four-point trend line on the spread chart. And if you break out above there, expect the silver miners, I think we will, are going to burst on the upside versus the gold miners. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you want to be in the monetary metals miners, but we're suggesting be one in silver as opposed to gold, and two, be in the silver miners versus the gold miners. And by the way, these silver miners are silver miners. They're not primarily copper producers, okay? That get byproduct of silver.
Right.
Anyway, I think it's... this is my personal investment focus, and we're informing our subscribers that we think the dynamics are already underway in the silver side of the equation, but that they could get accelerated far more sharply in the days ahead.
Michael, you mentioned earlier this idea of, you know, in the 30s of gold confiscation. Do you think that there's any risk of that coming into, let's say, the next 5 years?
No. You would have an upheaval if that occurred now. I mean, already several states have not only not taxed transactions in gold and silver, but made them legal tender. Mm-hmm. In effect, when the state of Texas or the state of Florida declares that you can use gold to pay your income tax for the state, that, in effect, is a rebellion against central bank monopoly having the dollar as the legal unit. They're saying, no, gold and even silver are now legal tender in our state. Mm-hmm. Money, okay? That is telling the central government, hey, you know, no, we're not seceding, but at least as far as monetary policy, we're seceding. We're now allowing gold and silver to be... The federal central government will never do that. The response would not be quiet submission. So no, that's not likely to happen. No.
Well, and I think it, you know, makes up for such a small percentage that the negative blowback that they could get from that is also just kind of pointless, right?
Yeah, and I think the world, you got to look at the world wider than just US, because to some extent US has painted itself into an historic intellectual corner. Other countries in the world, some of which you would, if I told you this 20 years ago, you would laugh at it. So would I. But, you know, ex-communist countries, because China is no longer really communist. The party has never changed their name. But to some extent, they have private roads. You know, our highways are quote, socialist highways because they're built by the government. OK, but their highways are largely privatized. But anyway, the point being, countries like China and other countries are seriously discussing or considering moving to gold-backed money units. Mm-hmm. In effect, not using fiat money anymore. and relying on, you know, real money. When that trend occurs, piecemeal, chunk here, suddenly the U.S. may wake up and who knows, maybe we'll have a gold-backed currency. I suspect that will only occur after a major crisis, financial crisis, where they suddenly realize, you know, this 100 years of this central bank game playing, it hasn't really worked. They've created monetary booms and busts, which reflect subsequent, lag by a year or so, stock market booms and busts. So it's been a game that hasn't really worked. It's not been around forever. It's only one long human lifetime we've had this central bank control over the money in it. So, no, I think those kind of events could occur because of the stuff we've been talking about. Because when certain other things fracture, emotion comes into play. I'm talking public emotion, hence political emotion, hence all assumptions that you thought were valid and going to be true go out the window. And when emotion hits and chaos in effect hits, cleansing chaos actually, all kinds of expectations about what's going to be could be totally wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to ultimately be a world that's primarily returned to solid money again. It's going to not be easy. It's going to require an expunging of certain other ideas and trends and institutions. And it's likely to happen. And it's really sort of beyond the control of government to stop it. It's just sort of going to happen because when these things happen, they happen. Mm-hmm. Governments try to print money to save bear markets from occurring, and it never succeeds. And I think that we're on the edge of that right now. That's why we're watching the stock market, especially the U.S. market, so closely, because it's a bubble beyond bubbles.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting to consider, as you said, if somebody else goes to a gold-backed currency, that's almost the re-weaponization of gold against the U.S. And very likely
the dollar's already in a bear trend. And when I say bear trend, in real dollar terms, it's always a bear trend. Because why? You almost double the money supply every decade. Well, that means, you know, the thing in your wallet decreases in value, you know, every decade dramatically. So when your granddad built a house, it cost him $4,500 was the median home price. You want to build a house, it's $450,000 is the median home price. What's that reflect? Simply the decay in the underlying value of the money unit. That's why a price of bread's no longer 15, 20 cents like when I was a kid. Okay. Price of home, price of, you know, wait till a gallon of gas goes up again, which I think it's about to explode, by the way. Crude oil's ripe for an upside breakout, technically, from our perspective. When that happens, even the assumption that Trump put across that he's going to keep energy prices low, drill, 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 et cetera, that's going to go out the window as well. And so all the assumptions we take and assume and hope, it's 52-card pickup. What's the prime beneficiary of this? Gold. Mm-hmm. Go back 25 years, same month, September. S&P is up 3.5-fold, 3.5 times, barely reflecting the decay in the money unit. Gold's up over 11 times from investment, you know, just a raw investment. So if your granddad told you 25 years ago to buy gold instead of put in the stock market and he bought gold coins, he's up 11-fold. And you're 3.5. Oh, boy. Okay. And yet you're all focused on the stock market, right? Like everybody. Why?
Well, Michael, of course, that doesn't include, you know, dividends reinvested, though.
Yeah, well, that marginally helps a bit. But, you know, even gold miners have, you know, Newmont pays pretty good, you know. Okay. Anyway. All right. Anyway, interesting world we got. And all these pieces will come together, I think, very rapidly, not incrementally. Mm-hmm. And very soon.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, I appreciate you walking us through all of these different charts, sharing your charts with us, with the audience here. Of course, all of your stuff is available at olivermsa.com and, of course, on X at @Oliver_MSA. Michael, thanks so much for your time today. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Tom.